Okay, I think we're ready to go now. We have the webinar is going to be recorded, and so I'll be able to take this recording and put it on our website, so it should be available there. We've had to do some rearranging on our website. If you went to go look for the old one, the one we did previously, it should be on there now. We loaded it late last week. But we've had to move some things around. So if you can't get to it, please let me know. Hopefully, it's pretty easy to get to. But thanks, everybody, for coming. Maybe the very first thing that we could do, it looks like we have three folks that have joined via the webinar and a couple more that are on audio. So I've got Bernie Grieve, Corey Evans, Teresa Ashton, I'm sorry, and Nell Huffman so far. Have I missed anybody else? Okay. And what would be helpful is if all of you folks could mute your phones, and then anytime you want to ask a question, you're certainly welcome to unmute and ask your question, or you can enter your question in the chat box in the lower left-hand corner is a good way to do it. And I'll try to keep an eye on that chat box and see if there's questions that come up as we go through. So today's webinar is going to focus on conducting effective meetings. And so we're going to go into what it takes to conduct an effective meeting, go over some basic Robert's Rules of Order, how you move through motions, those kinds of things, the roles of the chair and whatnot. So it should be, I'm hoping, a pretty informative meeting for you. It's always a good refresher for just about anybody that's associated with running public meetings. And most of what we're going to talk about does revolve around using Robert's Rules of Order. But there's also, we'll talk a little bit about, you know, simply meeting behavior and good decorum and those kinds of things. So we'll get underway here. So, and today I don't have any experts joining us, I'm sorry. A couple of people that I was hoping to have available for us were not available. They're busy folks. So conducting an effective meeting. Why is conducting an effective meeting important? Well, because, you know, you're a locally elected board member and your goal is to make the best decisions for your school that will result in increased student achievement. I mean, that's our number one priority, right? So you are tasked by the state constitution and the Alaska legislature to carry that out on behalf of the state. And so as a locally elected board member, it's really important that you understand your role and how you carry that out during a meeting. And it has a big impact on your ability to get the work done that you need to get done, and that people have confidence in your work, and that people also understand that they have an opportunity to see you do that work, and at times have an opportunity to have input into the public process. So, let's see here, my clicker isn't working. There we go. So, conducting an effective meeting, why, what is important? Well, when you conduct that meeting, your meeting is conducted in public, and the public has, at opportunities throughout the meeting, the ability to provide public input. But the key thing to remember is the meeting is your meeting in a public setting that provides transparency for your constituency. So while it's a meeting in public, it's not a public meeting. In other words, it's not simply a meeting for the public to participate in at any time. It's a meeting that you're going to conduct in a public manner so that people can see the business that you have to do and that it's transparent. And that's real important. At times, I think some people get confused that it might be, well, it's a public meeting and we can't tell people that they can't participate, and that's not true. It's a meeting that you will control. What's So, how do you conduct an effective meeting? Well, most school boards have adopted as policy the use of Robert's Rules of Order, primarily for small boards, which is really intended to facilitate meetings in the most efficient and effective way possible. And this really provides each member of the board and the public as needed an opportunity to participate in the meeting in really a fair and respectful manner. And that is what Robert's Rules is all about. It's all about providing and facilitating opportunities during the meeting for all those attending the meeting, primarily the board, to participate in an equitable manner. And it's not designed to exclude board members from participating. Now, there is, the rules set up a way for each board member to engage in the meeting, and there certainly is a level of decorum and a process by which each member can participate in the meeting. And that's what makes Robert's Rules pretty special. It's something that really does facilitate how a meeting progresses and allows you to get work done. And if you didn't have that, as we all know, we've probably been at meetings where we're trying to make decisions, and oftentimes if you're not really using Robert's Rules, it can be difficult to guide a group in one direction and get either a majority or a consensus. And there's different ways to operate meetings, but for most board meetings and most school boards, it's specified usually in your board policy or more likely in your board bylaws that each board would use Robert's Rules. And Robert's Rules primarily for small boards. Robert's Rules for, larger bodies is a little bit of a different critter and has a lot more to it than what we would use for small boards, which is, assemblies, school boards, those kinds of things. So when in doubt, how does my board operate? What is required of me? Go to your board bylaws. And your bylaws should tell you exactly, how your meeting should run. What are the ground rules? What are your expectations? What are your processes? And what is your responsibility? So bylaws are a great place to start. So if you're new to the board, it's something that you should actually review. That's probably one of the first things that you should review is your board bylaws. And surprisingly, they're usually not all that long. But in terms of determining how your board will operate and conduct its business in a meeting, that's a good place to go. And as I said, most boards in their bylaws note that they will use Robert's Rules of Order. And so if your bylaws say that, then that's really what you should do. If you're not using that, then you're not adhering to your bylaws, and it's something that should be pointed out and probably rectified. So basic principles of Robert's Rules of Order. And they're not quite as complicated as they might first seem. And once you get some experience under your belt, it makes it pretty easy. And there's some good references we'll get to at the end of the presentation. So basic rules are you take up one thing at a time, you hear from one person at a time, and you take up issues one time per meeting. So one is the key. One person, one time, one issue. All discussions that happen at the board table should be germane to the pending question. So if you're talking about an item that's an action item, the discussion around that item needs to stay germane to the question. And it's primarily the chair's role to kind of make sure that that happens, but other board members can also have an opportunity, to call into question whether or not the conversation is getting off topic. There shouldn't be any interruptions, so the board chair recognizes who's speaking, and unless there is a real need to, there should be no interruptions. The majority rules, so it's not decisions by consensus, it's decisions by majority. So just a real quick question here. If you have a five-member board, how many members make up does it take to make up a majority? You could just write it down in the chat box. Five-member board, how many board members would it take to make a majority? Three. Right, right. Okay, so how many board members would it take to make a quorum in order to have a meeting? Does anybody know the answer to that? Yes, usually the same number, a majority. So three. Now what happens, okay, what happens if you have a meeting and you have the minimum quorum, so three board members, and you vote on an action item, and the vote is 2-1 in favor? Does the motion carry? Does anybody know? 2-1 in favor. So, actually, it does not. And here I'll tell you why. In Robert's Rules, it says that, and usually also in your board bylaws and or policy, it says that in order to pass a motion, a majority of the board has to pass the motion. So it's a majority of the whole board, not just the board that shows up to the meeting. So even if you have a meeting and you meet a quorum, which would be three members out of a five-member board, and the motion seems like it passes in a 2-1 vote, it actually does not, because it doesn't have a majority of the full board. And I have found myself, even somebody who's been experienced, you get, you know, in a meeting and you go, okay, we have three members here and we vote on this, and okay, and I say, oh, it passes, you know, and somebody said, wait a minute, no, it didn't. And I go, you're absolutely right, it doesn't pass, because it was only a 2-1 vote. So the motion fails at that point. So just something to keep in mind. And silence implies consent. Now, okay, here's the one thing that I'd like to say about silence is, as a board member, unless you can prove and ask for a conflict of interest, which is pretty limited, each member is required to vote. In other words, you cannot abstain. You cannot abstain for no good reason. And the board is the one that has the ability to grant whether or not you can abstain because of a conflict of interest. And so it's not just the chair. The board has that authority. So there will be difficult decisions that will come along, and sometimes you don't want to make that vote, but you are required to make a vote. So just be prepared for that. Let's see. There was a question by Teresa that, you know, on that last question, if that motion fails, okay, 2-1, can it be brought back at another meeting? Yes, it could be brought back, but the only way that it can be brought back would be let me take that back. That one cannot be brought back because the motion failed. Okay? Because the motion failed, it cannot be brought back for reconsideration. If the motion had passed, okay, and you wanted to bring it back before the full board for reconsideration, those voting in the affirmative could ask for reconsideration at the next meeting, or even within that same meeting. But if that action fails, then it fails. It can't be brought back. So, good question. Thanks for asking that. So the other thing about Robert's Rules of Order is, we don't want any surprises. So how can you help to avoid surprises? And surprises being, bringing major issues up at the last minute, or trying to address something that is not on the agenda, that's not on the approved agenda. So can't do that. That's not proper protocol. And then the other part is, you know, the idea of teamwork is you don't really want surprises. You don't want to come into a board meeting with something that everybody has not had the chance to see or hear about or anticipate. And primarily the other piece is you don't want to come to a board meeting with something that the public has not been made aware of. So we want to keep that in mind. You have a right to know what will be discussed, so each one of you on the board will need to be able to look at the agenda and understand what's going to be the business in front of you, and the public has that right to know. Everyone on the board is equal, including the chair, and this is really important. The chair has no more authority sitting on the board than anyone else. The only thing that the chair does in terms of running the board meeting is their authority is to help facilitate the meeting, and hopefully the chair has some familiarity with operating a meeting and with Robert's rules and helping to facilitate the meeting. But in terms of any more power or authority than any other board member, the chair does not have that. And then over and under dedication to Robert's rules can be disastrous. So the idea is to be consistent with your application of Robert's rules. And sometimes there might be things that the board may decide, well, that's kind of a complicated Robert's rules. Can we do it in a specific way? Some bodies always require a roll call vote on every item that's discussed. That often happens in, say, assembly meetings, city or borough assembly meetings. Most of the time at school board meetings, and we'll get into this a little bit, you can often ask for unanimous consent, or you can say, is there objection to the motion? If there is none, then the motion passes. If there is objection, then you go through a roll call vote. It's just a way to kind of keep things moving along at a nice pace and not necessarily take up a lot of time with a roll call vote. So, and it's entered into the minutes that everyone, you know, voted in favor of the motion. So if that's the case and there's no objection, then that's reflected in the minutes, which needs to be. Let's see, we've got another question here. Oh, no, that's the same one, sorry. So does your board really need to know to follow Robert's Rules of Order? Yes, like I said, it's usually specified in your bylaws. Most small boards, less than 12 members in size, apply Robert's Rules. And again, there's some modifications. You can go to Robert's Rules of Order, the 10th edition. I think it says here, page 9, line 21. We'll go over that a little bit. We don't need to get too far into that, but for the most part, most boards do. Here are some of the most common protocol mistakes that school boards make in conducting meetings and using Robert's Rules. So the first one is not understanding what the chair's role is and is not. So the chair really does hold a very special place on the board in that the chair's main job is to facilitate the meeting and to ensure each board member has an equal opportunity to address issues. So that means the board chair, you know, goes through the agenda, tries to keep the board on track with the agenda, and then when issues come up, give each board member the opportunity to speak to the issue. If you don't take opportunity to speak to the issue, that's up to you. Then it will move around to the next board member, so to speak. And then the other part is that we try to make sure that board members all get the opportunity to speak to an issue at least once, and maybe a second time after the issue has been spoken about the first time. But we don't necessarily want to go around and around and around. Now, sometimes you will get into issues that have very lively debate, and the chair will need to make a judgment about how long we will let this debate go on. As long as there is new information going and a good, healthy debate is being conducted, then as a board, former board chair, I would let that discussion go on a bit and make sure that everyone was comfortable with the amount of information that we got in order to make, usually it's around a pretty controversial subject. But once you get to a point, then it's time to move on to a vote. So, again, don't allow surprises. So the chair should not allow surprises. Okay, and other board members should speak up if it's a surprise and say, you know, point of order, that issue is not germane to the subject or that issue was not part of the approved agenda, those kinds of things. Poor agenda planning usually constitutes a problem that boards can often make. So the agenda, of course, needs to be set ahead of time and it needs to be publicized before the meeting. There was a good question when I first sent this notification out for meetings that can agenda items be added at the meeting? Because there's a place on the agenda where we often where the board approves the agenda, and oftentimes, you know, board chairs say, "Are there any additions, corrections, or deletions to the proposed agenda?" There rarely should be any additions to an agenda. And if there are additions to agenda, it should only be either a report that needs to take place and or maybe a discussion item or an information item that comes up. But there should be no action by the board or any agenda item that would require action, a vote by the board on something, because it was not adequately publicized prior to the meeting. So that really can't happen. Okay, forget that the school board is a corporate board. So the idea here being is that you also have, you know, fiscal responsibilities. And because of such, you're required to conduct business in a certain way. Anytime you're going to be voting on fiscal issues, okay, it needs to be absolutely transparent. And as I mentioned before, and I'll mention again a little bit later, you will be required to do a roll call vote for those things, fiscal issues, financial issues. Other common mistakes, you forget to demand proper respect and protocol by all board members, and that's something the board chair really does need to keep on top of and make sure, you know, tempers don't get out of hand, that things don't get personal and whatnot. And it can be very difficult to do, especially if you have personalities that don't get along. But the idea of using Robert's Rules is to be able to help control that. And then forget that a board member conducts and sends messages to your community. So, again, I like this next slide. The board must not forget that somebody is always watching. You know, you are in the public eye. You know, and when I was on the Sitka School Board, it never ceased to amaze me that we would have, I'd have people that would come into town in my previous job, and I'd be working with a contractor or somebody that came in, and they were staying at the hotel or something, and they watched the school board meeting on TV. I said, "Man, don't you have anything more exciting to watch?" And they would say, "Oh, I saw the school board meeting last night, and that was a really good meeting. You guys ran a good meeting, and it was." I guess it was satisfying to me that people thought that in the first place, but that people are watching those things. So somebody's always watching you, whether it's somebody in the press or the public. So just bear that in mind and behave accordingly. So the agenda, let's talk about that a little bit. The agenda is really important. The agenda is our map of where we're going to go with the meeting. It's developed primarily by the superintendent and the chair. It's one of the responsibilities of the chair of the board. along with the superintendent. So the board and the superintendent usually meet several days ahead of when the agenda needs to be put out and published. Okay, so those two meet and list out what's going to be on the coming agenda. Okay, it's not final until the full board approves it at the meeting. And the agenda belongs to the members, not the chair or the superintendent. Okay, so, but it is important to make sure that you pull board members to make sure things get on the agenda that need to be on the agenda. Once the agenda is adopted, you can go back and add something or delete it, and it can only be changed in a regular meeting, and it requires a two-thirds vote most of the time. That's very uncommon. I mean, usually you get to the point in the agenda where you approve it, and then you move on. So I highly recommend that you don't really think about mixing up your agenda too much and adding or deleting things as the agenda goes. Sometimes you'll get, some boards have limits to how late they can meet, so you might get to a point where the meeting, it comes up to 10 or 11 p.m., and your board bylaws say the meeting must stop, and then you'll have to continue the meeting at another special meeting. So at that point, you kind of have to deal with that and pick up, you know, the agenda items that did not get addressed at that particular meeting. Handling board member general comments and concerns. Okay, so there are pieces and points in time during the meeting agenda that allow for comments and concerns by board members and also by the public. So one of the most common ones is persons to be heard, and that's usually a point in the meeting. Some people put it at the beginning of the meeting. Some people put it at the end of the meeting. Some people do it twice. But, some boards do it twice. But persons to be heard is the point in the meeting where people from the public can come speak to the board about an issue that's not on the agenda for action or discussion that evening. So there might be something that came up that you didn't know about, or somebody wants to give you information about something that's going to be going on in the community, and they want to talk to the board about it and give that information. It's not an opportunity for the board and the public to have a public discussion. The board simply sits and listens to the public talk to the board. Don't get lured into the trap of talking back to those who are presenting to the board. And there's usually a time limit on how long folks can speak to the board. It's usually somewhere around 3 minutes, and the board chair usually facilitates that. And then, let's see, last off here, the agenda is limiting in what can be proposed that evening. So the board chair and the superintendent will go through the agenda, and it's important for them to consider, you know, items on the agenda, how long it's going to take to get through these items, and give enough time for the board to do its work. And over time, I found as a board chair that was really a critical element. If I knew there were items coming up on the next meeting agenda that might be controversial, that might take a lot of debate, that might have a lot of public input, then I would make sure that those issues were on the agenda and that we didn't have a lot of other things that could take up time, so that we could spend quality time on those issues. So the board chair and the superintendent need to keep that into consideration. And then some other things about the agenda. The agenda is meant to inform members of the board. The idea of locking in business, so you publish what the board is going to be doing, and then alert the public to issues to be discussed, critically important pieces. You need to be careful about indicating where action items versus information or discussion items are. And again, like I said before, if it's a discussion or an information item and it's not been publicized that you're going to to take any action on those items, you can't take action. So make sure that that happens. Asking board members for agenda items should be routine, so the board chair and even the superintendent can ask the board prior to setting the agenda, are there items that you want on the agenda? And usually at the end of the meeting, are there, you know, we quiz the board about are there items to place on the agenda for the next meeting. And then the last thing I wanted to talk about here is the consent agenda. And the consent agenda is a way for the board to conduct business quickly and effectively when you don't believe that there's going to be a lot of debate about an issue. So usually in consent agenda, the items that normally get put into the consent agenda and considered all as one motion would be items like the minutes of a meeting and oftentimes second readings for, say, policy changes. Assemblies do it in terms of ordinances and those types of things if they don't believe it's going to be a very controversial issue. Items from the consent agenda can be pulled when the consent agenda comes up for approval, can be pulled for separate consideration. So that can happen. But when you have a number of issues, say you've just done a whole bunch of policy revisions and you've gone through first reading, okay, and maybe a particular policy on student discipline has come up, you've made some revisions and that's up for first reading. You go through first reading, you say, no, we still want to do some changes here. So it does not pass in first reading. It goes back to a committee for some work, and then it comes back again for first reading. Everything looks fine. So that was first reading. The public has an opportunity to have input on it in first reading, and then it comes to the board again at the next meeting in second reading. And if it looks like the board seems pretty satisfied with it and there doesn't appear to be a lot of additional public interest in the issue, it could be covered in the consent agenda and moved forward with a number of other items. But if somebody feels uncomfortable with that, a board member can ask to pull that agenda item. But consent agendas are a great way to keep your meeting moving right along. So public participation during board meetings, and this is kind of a crucial piece to understand. So again, the meeting is held in public, but it's not a public meeting. Usually there should be a sign-up procedure, okay, for members that are going to be speaking to the board. It's a good way to make sure you have a record of who is speaking to the board. Now, whoever's taking minutes for the board should be able to also put that in, but it's a great way to check and make sure that you've got everybody's name and the topic that they were speaking to the board about. So I would highly suggest that you use that sign-up procedure. And it's also an opportunity to let them know kind of the ground rules, that they'll have 3 minutes to speak to the board. The board does not, it's not an opportunity for the board to speak back to the public. It's simply the board's opportunity to listen to the public speak to them. The comments are limited to issues and should not involve individuals, and that's one really crucially important thing. So when we're talking about personnel issues, the board chair will need to be careful when you get into controversial issues or something that comes up. A parent or another staff member has a problem with another district employee or even a member of the board. Personal issues like that, dealing with individuals are inappropriate and they can't use names and references, those kinds of things. So it's important for the chair not to let that happen. And then don't debate during the public portion of the meeting. It's not going to be a public back and forth. And then establish follow-up procedures. And this is really important so that you're not alienating the public. You know, somebody has spoken to you about an issue, and as a board chair, I always like to say, we welcome testimony on issue on any issue not currently on tonight's agenda, and we will make sure that you will receive a response from the board concerning your issue, you know, just acknowledging that you spoke to the board and brought the issue before them. So it's just a good way to make sure that you continue to have and engage the public in participation at your meetings. Accurate board meeting minutes are critical, but the meetings don't have to have every single little detail. So things that need to be included in your board meeting minutes should be, of course, date, time, and place of the meeting, the board members who are present, as well as members of the public who will speak. So again, having that sign-up sheet is important. You know, anybody that's given a presentation or spoken to an issue, when we get into actually having action items and we open the floor to comments from the public, it's important to know who spoke to those issues. So that should be reflected in the minutes. All motions and their disposition, in other words, all motions and what the motion says and the object of the motion need to be recorded in the minutes. Then each member's vote must be recorded by name. Now, this doesn't always happen if it's a unanimous vote or, you know, there's no objection. So the board secretary, those that are collecting the minutes can say, you know, it's a unanimous consent. Or they can simply say, you know, all board members voted for that motion by unanimous consent and then list who was there. So, but the board meeting minutes are really a record of what was done and not necessarily what was said. So the meetings will not have everything that was said at the meeting. Now, most meetings are recorded, and usually those recordings are saved, at least for some length of time, and because oftentimes, you know, the executive administrative assistant will take those recordings back and type up the minutes based on those recordings. So if you want to hear what somebody actually said, you can usually go to the district office, get that recording, and sit down and listen to it. Here's what to generally leave out of minutes. Opinion or interpretation of the secretary, so whoever's doing the minutes. Judgmental phrases and flowery language. We want it just to be pretty specific, pretty concise. Motions that are withdrawn, you don't always have to include those because they end up going nowhere. Now, that's just a general guideline. Sometimes you might wish to have that because at the next meeting, there might be a need to reintroduce a motion. But if a motion is withdrawn, it basically never existed. Name of a person seconding the motion. This is optional. I think most of the time when I read minutes, it usually has the maker of the motion and the second. But the second doesn't always agree with the maker of the motion. Sometimes they will second the motion just so they can get it on the table and discuss it. Language of reports. So for most reports, then we would attach those to the minutes as extraneous documents, you know, documents that have that detail. And then this idea of transcript style writing. It's, you know, it's not very flowery. It's very concise. It doesn't have a lot of extra nuance or anything into it. It's just what actually happened at the meeting. And once you begin reading board minutes, and if they're very well done, they're very concise, you know, you really appreciate that, especially if you've had several meetings to be at. So meeting minutes are really critical. They are legally binding once the board approves them at the next meeting. So it's critical for you to read through the minutes and make sure stuff was not missed, that it was put in the minutes properly. So the next meeting, when it comes time to approve those minutes, make sure that you've taken the time to look through those minutes and make sure that they reflect the business that actually happened. If you have any questions prior to the meeting about the minutes, go look at the recording. Go check your notes. Make sure that happens so when you come to the meeting, you're prepared. Minutes are a recording of actions of the board and not of individuals, and everyone's job is to ensure minutes are accurately reflect the actions of the board. So that's why it's important to go through that. The "I didn't mean it" board member is, the one that says, "Well, you know, I said this, but I didn't really mean that." You know, that's where you kind of get into this nuance, and those kinds of things shouldn't be a part of the meeting minutes. They just muck it up. And so again, it needs to be concise and factual. Let's talk about motions and how the board actually deals with motions and amendments, because this is how you do your work. You know, any major decision that you're going to make through the use of motions and amendments. Okay, there's really six steps for adopting a motion. So step one, a member makes a motion. Step two, a member seconds that motion. Step three, the chair states the question. Okay, the question or the motion. Those two are interchangeable words for each other. Step four, the members debate. Now, actually, I should modify this. I didn't catch this on the first go-around. So usually what happens is step four really should be the chair allows the public to speak to what I would used to say is there anyone from the public that wishes to speak to the merit of the motion? So it gives the opportunity for the public to speak to the motion at hand, okay? And they can say, yeah, I agree with this. No, I don't agree with this. Now, these are things that I think you should think about. So once the public has had a chance to speak to the motion, then it should come back to the board and the members for debate, right? Now it's back to the board, and once everybody in the public's had their opportunity to speak, the chair will say, now I return the motion in question to the board for debate. And then the board members debate, and then finally, once debate has concluded, the board members vote, and the chair announces the vote. So let's go through each of those steps quickly. So a board member makes a motion. Motions, it's most helpful. And usually in the agenda, we try to write out motions or motions that, they may not be exactly that motion, but some suggested wordings for motion. But have it written out so you avoid confusion. When a motion is poorly worded, the chair has the option to assist in clarifying. And that's a key role. Make sure that the chair understands what the motion is, and the chair can help in clarifying that so that everybody understands what they're going to be voting on. You don't want something that really is not well defined. It's going to make it really difficult. Let's see. I think we've got a question here. It looks like we've also got a new person on, Eugenia. When the chair says a question has been called, what happens next? We go on to a roll call vote. Very good question, and we'll actually get to that, but that is a common mistake that most boards make when dealing with Robert's Rules of Order, okay? And I hear it all the time, and it drives me up an absolute wall. So somebody on the board, you'll get almost done with debate, and somebody will say, I call for the question. And then the chair says, okay, the question's been called, we'll now vote. And that is actually an entirely improper procedure. When somebody says, I call for the question, that is actually another motion. And that is a motion to terminate debate and move to a vote of the motion. But the board has to approve by voting on the call for the question whether or not they want to limit debate. So no board member, and this gets back to this idea of all board members have equal power, no single board member has the authority to stop debate. So please think about that carefully. No single board member has any more authority than any other board member. So the only authority rests in the entire board. So if you get to a point where you think, well, we're not making any progress on this issue, we've gone around the table three or four times, and the board chair hasn't limited debate, a board member can say, I move to call for the question. Okay? And that does not require a second. So once somebody says, I move to call for the question, there's no second required. And it's not a debatable motion. And the board chair has to say, the question, you know, there's been a motion to call for the question. And is there any objection to calling for the question? If there's objection and the question fails, then the board just continues debate until the chair says, we move, is there any further debate, and we'll move to a vote. So hopefully that answers your question, but that's a common mistake that most boards make. Let's see, where were we here? A maker says a few brief words about the motion that they have just put forward. Okay, and here is a couple of things. The chair can make motions. A lot of people think the chair cannot make motions, but the chair can make motions. Most of the time, the chair refrains from making motions, okay? Because the chair's primary job is to be a facilitator. And a chair, and I have seen this happen, some chairs can abuse their position and basically hog the meeting. And that's not really what you want to do. But chairs can make motions. In Robert's Rules for small boards, it's absolutely okay for chairs to make motions. You want to be precise in the motions that you make. So there was something else that I was going to say. Well, it'll probably pop into my head here in a minute. So, main motions are out of order if they're not germane to a pending question, okay, and you can't make a motion about something that hasn't been on the agenda, okay, so we can't do that. You don't want a motion that will conflict with local, state, or federal law. Sometimes that happens, you know, sometimes it happens that you will pass something and you'll find that's in conflict with law. Hopefully that's extremely rare, and then you may have to go back and deal with that at another meeting. You don't want a motion that presents the same question that was dealt with earlier in that meeting. That's not allowed. You can't take up basically the same question. For instance, if a motion came up regarding an issue, let's just say you were deciding whether or not you were going to be 2A or 3A school in terms of activities, right? And the motion, and you're right on the brink, and you can choose, are you going to stay 3A or are you going to drop down to 2A? And if the motion fails to drop down to 2A, you can't pick it up again. It's done with. You've made that motion. And if it passed or failed, the decision was made. You can't reconsider that. Unless those voting in the affirmative say, I wish to reconsider the question, okay, at another time, which would be either later in that meeting and it's the same motion, or at another meeting. But you can't come back to the question with a whole other motion. So hopefully that makes sense. And then action outside the scope of the organization. Of course, you know, you don't want to be considering motions that have that really don't pertain to what your mission is as the school board, what your job is as the school board. So be careful with that. You know, think about things that you're going to talk about, and are those items that really are part of your job? Okay? Step two, second the motion. Implies that a member wishes to hear discussion and not necessarily that they are in favor, okay? As I said, it's seconded so that it simply comes up for debate. If no one seconds the motion, it fails. So usually the chair will give an should give an adequate amount of time to consider a second for a motion. But if a second, if the motion is not seconded, it's assumed there is no support for the motion, and thus the motion that's been introduced fails without going to a vote. Some items do not require a second. So I just spoke to one of those, you know, and that is a call for the question. Does anybody else know what a couple other motions that don't require seconds might be? They're pretty common ones. And one of them we talked about earlier in the agenda, piece of the agenda. And then there's one at the end of the meeting. You can just tap it on your in the chat box. So, yes, a motion to adjourn. Yeah, you don't need a second on a motion to adjourn. And usually we don't need a second on a motion to consider the consent agenda. And then the third one that we usually don't need a second on is a motion coming from committee. So if you, for instance, you have a policy committee that's making revisions to policy or a new policy to be considered by the board, if it comes from committee, it doesn't require a second. So those are three common ones. Okay, so once we have the motion out there, the chair states the motion, all right, and formally places the motion before its members. And at that point, once it's been seconded, the motion becomes the property of the board, all right, and it no longer has any particular affiliation or ownership by a board member, okay? So transfers ownership to the full board. The chair should restate the motion during debate, and then the chair reminds the board about straying from the question, staying pertinent to the question, staying germane. After this step, the board must do something with the motion. So this is where, you know, in these steps, the next piece, I would say, would be to ask the public for input on the motion. So it's the one, it's the other piece in time where the public has access to speak to the board on issues. And again, they simply speak to the board. The board does not speak back to them. Okay, so you're getting input from the public, and then it comes back to the board table. Okay, and usually when it comes back to the board table, you usually try to give the maker of the motion, the originator of the motion, the ability to speak to the motion first, because they will oftentimes try to put the motion in some sort of context for you to consider. Debate and focus on the immediate pending question. Don't get off on some rabbit trails and get down in the weeds and some other bit of business that may be loosely associated with the issue. The chair should be making sure that that happens. And you as a board member also have that ability. You can, if you feel like that's happening, you can simply, it's the one point where you can interrupt and you can say, point of order.
Wait till the afternoon.
Point of order, and say the conversation is not germane to the issue. Okay. And then the debate should be alternated between pros and cons, but it must remain germane, and members who have not yet spoken should be recognized before members speak a second time. That whole idea about providing equity of opportunity for every board member. Really important to do. And it gives everybody, it maintains that idea that you're a team and everybody has the opportunity to speak to an issue, even if you don't agree. And we need to maintain a certain amount of decorum for that to happen. Step five is the members then vote. So once you get to a point and the board where there doesn't seem to be any further discussion, and the board chair can say, is there any further discussion? And if the further discussion is a repetition of what was previously spoken, then the chair can actually say, that has already been said. We do not need to say that again, so you're not recognized. Okay? And we will move for a vote. Or somebody could say, I move to call for the question. You hope you don't have to do that, because that just strings things out a little longer. And then when we go to the vote, each member can either vote, if you do a roll call vote, which usually happens for financial matters, fiscal items, or the chair may ask for either a unanimous consent, or more likely, you can say, is there objection to the motion, or the motion will pass without objection, to speed things along. And if there is objection, somebody just has to say, I object. And if there is objection, then you go to a roll call vote. It's very simple to do. But it does help move things along. And all votes regarding fiscal issues require a roll call vote. Pretty simple. And usually, your executive administrator or your superintendent will make sure that you understand, oh, no, that needs to be a roll call vote. Members vote, announce vote. So then you announce the vote totals for the minutes. So the chair should say, you know, passes by unanimous consent, or, you know, the motion passes one way or another. Sometimes the chair doesn't have to repeat it. Oftentimes the executive administrator, administrative assistant, which sits at the board table, repeats the results of the vote. So that's fine. And then it's recorded in the minutes. Again, announcing the vote, and then what happens. So, 10 things you must know for motions for school board meetings. You need a motion to adjourn. You need a motion to recess. Okay. Motions to lay on the table. Okay, so that's where you say, I would like to table the motion, which tabling the motion usually postpones it to the next meeting, or sometimes later in the meeting it can be taken off the table. Oftentimes there is another motion that says, I move to postpone to a date certain, which means it will be taken up at a specific time, either in that meeting or some following meeting. If you move to lay a motion on the table indefinitely or postpone indefinitely, and the board votes for that, then essentially they haven't voted on the merit of the motion. They've simply taken it off the table, and it can never be reconsidered. It's kind of a quirky thing. Previous question, that's the same as I call for the question. So I move for the previous question is really the correct terminology versus I call for the question. And then limit and extend the limits of debate. And you can get a motion to limit debate. And again, that's similar to I move for the previous question. Postpone to a time certain or a certain time, I mentioned that. So sometimes you may find you're debating an issue and you find out that, you know, there is more information that's needed. We need to get some information from somewhere, or we're going to end up asking the administration to look into something before we make the final decision. And it's a good practice to say, well, we could postpone this and take that up again at the next meeting. You can commit or refer a motion to a committee. That can happen. Secondary amendment and primary amendments. So you can modify motions with other motions that amend the main motion. And then there is the main motion, which is generally what we've been talking about. So when we talk about primary amendments, we're generally talking about the first time you want to, if you have a motion that's on the table and you want to change something in the wording, the specific wording of that motion, you have the primary amendment. Okay. And then somebody may say, yeah, and I want to change something else within that amendment. That would be the secondary amendment. we highly suggest that you don't go beyond that. And what happens is you would vote on the secondary amendment first, and if that's accepted, then that amends the primary amendment. Then you vote on the primary amendment, and that amends the main motion, and then finally you go back and vote on the main motion as amended. So, does everybody get that? It's kind of this hierarchy of what we have to do, this tier of what happens. And if you get beyond a secondary amendment, it gets out of hand pretty quick, and it's really hard to follow. So it's better that you only go to a secondary amendment, and sometimes you may have several primary amendments as you discuss an issue. So the main motion can change significantly and as many times as needed through the amendment process. All right, real quickly, some simplified charts of most used parliamentary motions. So adjournment, debatable, no, amendable, no, just requires a majority vote. You can go down through here. Recess, debatable, no. So that's just saying, we want to take a recess. Now, sometimes, and this is one of those places where Robert's Rules for Small Boards gets a little bit more flexible. Very rarely would I ever use as a board chair the idea that we'd have to vote on a recess. The board chair could often just say, we will go into recess for, 10 minutes or something. So it's not that big a deal. So this is one of those issues where you may modify procedure a bit. Lay on the table, close debate. Neither one of those are debatable or amendable. And close debate, it will require a two-thirds majority to close debate. So that idea of the previous question or call for the question has to have a two-thirds majority to do that. And again, that goes back to the idea of the whole process here is to allow folks the opportunity to participate. So we're almost done here, folks. I'm sorry we're running just a little bit over time. So you can come back and take a look at these motions a little bit later. It's pretty straightforward. And again, another simplified chart of common procedural motions. Look at amend previously, rescind a motion. So these take some pretty heavy lifting. You want to make sure that the whole board, that most of the board is in agreement. Divide the question. That's if you have a motion and you want to divide it into two motions to deal with two items that might be better dealt with separately. Suspend the motion. And then appeal. So wrapping this all up, conducting a good meeting, characteristics of a well-run meeting, you have a well-developed, clear agenda, and it's available well prior to the meeting. You've had appropriate materials that have been available for both board members and the public, and board members have done your homework before you come to the meeting. Critically important. Characteristics of a well-run meeting include the board chair understands their role is to serve the board by facilitating a good meeting. The board chair should be familiar with Robert's rules and be prepared to keep the meeting on track with respect, civility, and a firm hand. You have to do that sometimes. And then the board chair ensures that all members get the opportunity to be heard, and again, that idea of being germane to the topic at hand. And here's the other part that I really like to stress, is that board members also need to understand the role of the board chair and their role in supporting the board chair and following the meeting rules. And if the board chair and the board itself understands how that works, it really goes a long ways for having a well-run, effective meeting. Okay, the board cultivates and demonstrates a decorum of respect even during vigorous debate and disagreement. And I have to say that sometimes some of as a former board member and as a board chair, I often felt most proud of issues that we made decisions on when we had vigorous debate. We did not necessarily vote unanimously, but I felt like we as a board did our due diligence to discuss the issue. We had various different points of view. We voted in a particular manner, and then the board said, that's it. We've made our decision, and as a board, now we rally around that decision. So when a decision is made, it belongs to the entire board, even if you did not agree with it. And that's really critically important. And, you know, some days you're going to win, and some days you're going to lose. And kind of that idea of what goes around comes around, just remember that you're on a team, and you're not really working against each other. It all has to do with our mission of providing education and student achievement. And then, Bernie, your question, would I be able to send this presentation in an email? Yes, absolutely, and it will also be available on the website. So, last couple of slides here. Characteristics of a well-run meeting. Only the board, acting as one legal unit, has authority. So no one board member has authority to do anything. It's only the board as a whole. And the board works and acts in an ethical manner as per your board policy and bylaws. And that is transparent to the public. So keep that in mind. And finally, here are some great references for you folks. So Ann McFarland runs a website and a blog called Jurassic Parliament, and you can find her at jurassicparliament.org. Fantastic site, great lady, very experienced. If you have questions about parliamentary procedure and Robert's Rules, great place to go. Board Basics by Jerry Covey is an excellent one. And this one I found, rulesonline.com, has the 11th edition of Robert's Rules, and a very easy website to go to and get information. So, and then finally, this last slide is, just a couple of references. So, yes, this presentation will be available on the website, and if those of you who attended the meeting would like me to email it to you, I will do that. So let me just... Command-Shift-4. So I'm just taking a picture of the screen here to make sure I've got everybody on here. And, if you don't get it in the next few days or see it on the website, send me an email and I'll make sure I get it to you. So hopefully this was helpful to everybody. I'm sorry we ran over. We got started a little bit late, but if you have any questions, please let me know. You can send me an email. I'd be more than happy to answer your questions or give you some advice on, what's going on in the board meeting with you and how, things can or should happen. So, all right, thanks everybody. I appreciate you attending, and we'll have another one here in a couple of weeks.